You're listening to Majority Thursday on 670 KBOI. We talk to Republicans about the latest news in the Idaho legislature. Now here are Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
And top of the morning, Paul, Jay, and Chris, we have Senator Cliff Meyer from District 21, Representative John Vanderwater from District 22, the Majority Caucus Chair. In studio this morning. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
As we're nearing, what, the final 2 weeks?
Hopefully it's the final week. Hopefully we'll be done next week. Is where the House is moving at this point. Yeah, we're shutting down most of the committees and hope to be done next week.
There aren't any brick walls or,
high hurdles.
Well, there's a couple still out there yet, and that's what may keep it longer than that. There's still some disputes on the governor's reading initiative. They haven't ironed out where that is going and what they're going to do with it, and so that, to me, is probably the one hurdle that's out there that we have to get done and be able to sign and die.
What's it going to take to get that done?
Well, they've been having meetings, trying to come up with a path forward. The governor has a path forward. The education chairman have a different path forward. And so there has to be somewhere where I guess we agree on what the path forward might be on it.
Does it seem like a difficult problem to you?
It is, because what we're really struggling with is the accountability part going forward in the program. If we're putting this much more money into it, where's the accountability coming back? Are we getting results for the money we're putting into it?
What is the legislature doing right now in terms of civil asset forfeiture for those people who are arrested, put in jail, that sort of thing?
Civil asset forfeiture is an issue that has been worked on for a couple of years now to kind of reach a good balance between law enforcement and their responsibilities and the law through the legislature to protect folks so that there's transparency and a due process that lends to public trust and in our lawmakers and in our law enforcement, so that there's cause and effect and reporting, so that it's public as to what kind of civil asset forfeiture takes place in Idaho.
Close to 2,000 students were at the Capitol yesterday, outside, inside, in the rotunda, making a lot of noise, trying to draw attention to the gun violence problems in Florida. What do you think of these protests, and how were they received by the legislature?
Well, on the Senate side of the building, I heard a lot of that noise while we were in floor session.
Sure.
So didn't see much of it until afterwards when I went looking around during lunch. There were a lot of kids down there. And I'm all for participation and such. I don't know the technicalities as to how that works with their teachers and being out of school. But I will say that if you want to look at it positively, it lends to an educational opportunity in regards to some of the messaging I saw that juxtaposed kids with firearms and some of the mantra that is out there. And it's healthy to have that dialogue because, I guess I'll just finish by saying I don't subscribe to that. I think there are other provisions in regards to school safety and responsible, the responsibilities of parents and the responsible gun owners and how that all works, and that basically criminals will be criminals regardless of changes in the law.
When was the last time that Idaho maybe passed something substantial about mental health? Has that been a while?
Actually, that's been something that's been worked on every year for the last several years in regards to mental health facilities, the transition facilities, when you have somebody who law enforcement has to pick up, but it's not entirely appropriate to just put them in the county jail overnight. They have counselors, and they have a little bit more help with domestic violence situations or mental health situations that I think I think is an important facet of all this, especially when you tie mental health factors to some of the violent crimes that occur, particularly on school grounds.
Or almost all of them, really.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, yesterday I was at the CUNA school district, and they, in response to the violence, decided to have – the student body decided to have a week of kindness to counter what they were doing. And then they had a rally yesterday where several of us were talking, and I think they tried to do the positive aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I was very complimentary to that whole school to have the rally and talk about the issues, talk about school safety, and try to make something positive come out of it instead of just walking out of class and going down the road. And so they did try to honor the 17 students, but they also tried to get something positive out of it.
Message received?
I believe so. I think it was a good turnout, and I think I was there along with Senator Den Hartog, and then Representative Matt Erpelding was also there. And I think it was well received. I think the students received it. And we reminded them that, you know, we've dealt with suicides in high schools and stuff like that, that you have to reach out to the kids that are on the fringes, reach out to the kids that are struggling, because that usually seems to be where we get the bad results from. And to remember that even when we did the school safety bill, they said in as school resource officers, the state was dealing with 14 instances, and we think nothing's happening here, but there are threats being made.
Yeah.
Just nothing has been carried out, and we have to realize that we have to follow up on that.
What's going on right now with child tax credits in the state?
Well, a lot of things are happening in the tax arena overall. There are other tax issues you may not hear as much about, like increasing the tax incentive for our consideration regarding adoption, regarding some research and development in the state. There are a lot of other tax pieces moving around. The big tax bill that everyone knows about a little bit more had a facet. It was part of conformity with the federal changes, and it has a provision in there regarding a child tax credit. And there's a trailer bill now that is increasing that credit after further study and consideration of a window of household incomes and having a certain number of kids, three or more kids, the larger families. Mm-hmm. And so that effort is to help displace the tax liability changes for those families. All in all, it's a little bit convoluted, but when the dust settles and your changes in your federal tax liability are reconciled with your changes in your state tax liability, most, if not all, should be ahead.
That sounds good.
All right. It is a majority Thursday. Senator Cliff Beyer from District 21, Representative John Vanderwater from District 22 are our guests this morning. It's 8:45.
You're listening to Majority Thursday on 670 KBOI.
Majority Thursday on Idaho Talks Live. In our next title studio, we have Senator Cliff Beyer and Representative John Vanderwater. Veto overrides. There's going to be something maybe happening in the next week or so with that. Is it?
Well, it's a consideration. It's a part of the process, and it can affect when we get done with session.
Right.
We have to have all the bills confirmed, transmitted, and received to the governor's office. But above and beyond that, it's arguably legislative responsibility to treat the last bill like the first bill and take into consideration the timelines and whether or not, if there's a veto action, the legislature, whether or not they take action on it, they have to be there to consider a veto override, because it's a balance between legislative and executive branches, and it's part of our responsibility, and it affects the timeline.
What change would this make, the veto override bill?
Well, right now, before we can sign EDI, all the bills have to be on the governor's desk. That was clarification from the courts.
Gotcha.
And so we cannot sign EDI until the governor has received all the bills on his desk. Once that's happened, he then has 5 days, if we're still here, he has 5 days to veto or sign those bills. If we stay for those 5 days, then we have that chance to do an override on any vetoes that might happen.
Okay, gotcha.
If we sign EDI, he then has 10 days to sign the bills or veto them.
Taxes. Let's talk about taxes and what has transpired so far. Are you happy? Do you think you did the best you could? Is there something you would have liked to have seen done? Bigger cuts, shifting money around a little bit, or are you pretty well satisfied?
Well, we're both strong advocates of the grocery tax policy and changing from the credit system to taking the tax off of food at the register. Mm-hmm. And that has broad legislative support, broad public support, not from the governor's office, and he was rather candid in his veto letter after the last session. The trying to navigate the politics of that and getting that through this session was basically a non-starter with a few key legislators and the executive branch. And so other proposals come and you see what rises to the occasion of having enough support. There's no exclusivity as to this tax break is good and this one's bad. There's tax policy, you know, cuts all kinds of different ways. And
right.
So it's part of the legislative process, and you have to navigate that. And the grocery tax debate is not going away. And as most know, several, if not all, of the gubernatorial candidates have preemptively endorsed for the next administration. And so the debate's still alive and well.
Yeah, I'm glad he asked that, because that's what I meant to ask last time. What changes are there in the grocery tax?
Well, and part of it is
that the governor won't override.
Yeah,
or veto it, I mean.
Yeah, and part of it is that if you look at the grocery tax, we tax the groceries and then we give people money back. Well,
right.
So we're admitting it's a bad tax. Otherwise, we wouldn't be giving them credit and giving them the money back. And so why do we want to funnel it and make it go around the circle? Why don't we just get rid of it?
That sounds so reasonable.
Yeah.
There is a new House bill on trespassing. It would enact harsher penalties for trespassers, and it would change posting requirements for landowners. Do you guys have an opinion on that one?
Yes, I just sat through committee deliberations for a few hours yesterday on that. It is now on the Senate amending order, and there are some tweaks to it, some considerations to be made for everything from law enforcement to clarification regarding civil court costs and such for people that might go through a trespassing proceeding, and clarification regarding the posting. There are posting provisions in that bill. It's part of an education process in a sense, and there, you know, the concerns, a lot of them have been valid, but there is also a great recognition of respect of private property out there, as there should be. And trying to be reasonable, because you know you don't have to have posting in your front yard of your home, and you shouldn't have to.
Well, gentlemen, we are out of time. We thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guests have been Senator Clifford Beyer from District 21, Representative John Vanderwater from District 22, Majority Caucus Chair. It's 8:56, Idaho Talks Live. Coming up.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
It's Idaho Talks Live. 9:05, and we're going to be talking here pretty quickly with Ada County Commissioner Rick Visser. How are things going with you so far today?
You know, that rain was great.
Yeah.
That was a record yesterday, and that'll green up our lawns and get the spring mood going.
Absolutely. What's new, Mr. Visser?
Boy, we are loaded with things. The legislative session
had an election the other day, and
We can start with that.
Sure.
The West Data school bond and levy election barely passed by a margin of less than 1%. But it did pass, and we know about the overcrowding in West Ada. But the other fact that's coming out is, unfortunately, that the school district, since 2010, has accumulated bonds and interest debt of almost $500 million.
Holy smokes.
So that's double our annual budget, and that's something that we need to work with the schools to try and get that number under control.
And how are we going to do that?
I think we need to press accountability from the school boards, the trustees, building buildings that are more practical than they are extravagant. They got a little carried away with Rocky Mountain and with Mountain View High School. But I think the message will get out.
And of course, West Ada didn't have much problem with things passing. I guess in Nampa, it was a completely different story.
Yeah, the other school districts, Nampa, Caldwell, Jim, they came up well short. In fact, in one of those measures, I remember hearing on the news yesterday, they only had a 40% voted in favor of it.
Wow.
Saw some disturbing video in the West Ada election of exactly how crowded those relatively new schools are. It's amazing.
Oh, it is. I've gone over to Centennial High School. Well, actually, I've gone to all of the high schools, Centennial, Meridian, Eagle, Mountain View, and Rocky Mountain. And the hallways between classes, it's almost like a sidewalk in New York City. And some kids eat lunch by sitting down in the halls. There's not a place for them to eat. So it needs to be addressed. We just need to figure out the most efficient way of doing it.
Yeah, and one of the neighborhoods where I used to live, they built a brand new grade school several years ago. And that summer, before it actually even opened, they were putting temporary classrooms out to one side. And I thought, okay, that's a little strange.
It is a little strange. Maybe we need to go up when we build these projects and take advantage of the space, because we know what's happening with the price of land in the Treasure Valley.
Well, it's what they had to do at Boise State. You know, they called Custer one more floor Bob. So, I mean, it could be one more floor Rick.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. I'll look into that. My family history and building hopefully would help me with that.
There are some legislative bills that are pertaining to Ada County, and one of those is on jail housing reimbursement. I guess that's still awaiting the governor's signature.
It is. Fortunately, it's got through both the House and the Senate. And just to make folks aware of this, Ada County has been subsidizing the state on this matter for years, because the reimbursement is based on a statute. And we were getting reimbursed at a rate of $45 to $55 a year over the past several years. And then it went up to 75, but we're still, I believe the actual charge is around $150. We're not there yet, but this law gets us up to $100. And it was interesting, once we did that and talked about it, the state started moving some of the inmates out. It's still cheaper to keep them at Ada County Jail, but our citizens and taxpayers aren't losing as much money.
It's a big problem, isn't it, housing criminals?
Man. It is. A staggering figure is that back in 1985, the average number of inmates per night at the Ada County Jail was around 90. 30 years later, in 1985, the average number of inmates was over 900 per
night.
Holy
smokes.
Tenfold increase. And recently, why we really pushed this bill is we were hitting capacity, the number 1,100 in our jail.
Now, going along with that same theme, you know, people going to jail or being arrested for various things, we have House Bill 552, which deals with misdemeanor probation supervision funding.
Boy, we had to come up with this bill. Our misdemeanor probation program has been very successful. We have a greater percentage of inmates and probationers that are not returning to jail than those that are. So it's been working. It's been a self-funded, user-based program where the fines that these people need to pay go right into the program. Mm-hmm. However, the Supreme Court can funnel that money, and they took away almost a third of our internal program money and put it towards their court automation system, and we've had that 2 years running. And unfortunately, Our bill in this matter failed. We wanted to go a strict interpretation of the statute and change it so it was self-supporting. However, the Supreme Court pushed one in that changed in the funding formula, and we moved up. We'll just see if it's far enough in the next year.
Okay. The county's moving toward legal notices posted online. Is this, are you jumping onto the whatever century it is, 22nd century?
You bet I am. I introduced a resolution last year at the commissioners and clerks conference in Idaho Falls. All 44 counties were represented, and my resolution was to put forth a bill that allowed any entity of government, city, county, state, the option of publishing legal notices either online or in the newspapers. Last year, Ada County spent $60,000 just in fees to newspapers for those legal publications. And in my demonstration, I showed how effective web pages are. You can have links. If there's a legal notice, you can have links to a map, to a satellite view, to financing that's available, and other legal notices that are related. And the reality of it is that newspaper circulation is just gone down the tank. The numbers aren't a fraction of what they were even 15 years ago.
Well, I've always thought the Ada County website is pretty good as websites go, and it's easy to navigate. This would be then another page on there, and everybody could eventually just know this is how you find them.
Right on our opening page, or what they call now the landing page, we'd have a tab for legal notices, and you hit that, and it's got a search engine. It has a format display either by date or by topic, and another ones we'll add into it. But we're going to be really active in adding that to our site, and we'll go back next year and hopefully get the bill passed.
Yeah, it would seem that that would be so much more handy than trying to find which newspaper it was in, et cetera, et cetera.
It sure is. I heard that the state of Idaho spent over $1 million last year just in their legal notices that they published throughout the state. And are you getting a return on your dollar for the taxpayers? I don't think so.
Yeah. Newspapers aren't glad to hear it, though.
No, their lobbyists put up a fight, and it died in committee, but we're going to come back stronger next year.
KBOI News Time, 9:14. We're talking with Ada County Commissioner Rick Fisher.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Now you can text Paul, Jay, and Chris. Text your message to 208-336-3700. Standard text rates apply. Sponsored by Diamond Heating and Cooling.
It is Idaho Talks Live. In our next title studio, we have Ada County Commissioner Rick Visser. I know the easiest thing that you guys do always is, of course, putting together the fiscal year budget.
You know.
Oh, wait a minute.
That's right. What
that's
gave
the
you
most,
that?
That's the most difficult thing. Sorry, I had it exactly backward. And your budget kickoff was held on Monday. That must have been fun for you.
Well, we get off to a fun start because we share with the different departments where we're at, what our estimates are showing, and we have an outstanding staff in our auditor's office. Kathleen Graves is one of them. She does a great job, and then Tim is one of her other workers, and they just do a great job. So we have a good feel where we're at. We share that with our departments, and yet we also say, well, it looks like we may have an added expense here. Are we going to have an added expense with the misdemeanor probation program? That's uncertain at this point, but we have to be cautious.
And as you are not the federal government, you do have to balance it.
That's a constitutional requirement for county and state government here in Idaho, and I think it's a good law. I really do. You don't want to take a risk and go in the red with taxpayers' money.
Much fluctuation from year to year, budget-wise? Or is it more or less the same with minor tweaks?
I would say it's pretty much the same with minor tweaks. The biggest part of our budget is public safety in the sheriff's office. We have law enforcement and public safety out there, and then our jail is a huge part of the budget, too. There's tweaks is what we do. The increase annually has not been that huge. It's been acceptable. We follow another law where we said our increase can only be 3% per year.
Mm-hmm.
And on taking revenue anyway from taxpayers and property tax. But it's going to be very challenging. It'll take up the next 5 months, and the final submissions will be in August, and then we'll present it to the public with open public hearings and pass it or amend it.
What were the highlights in your year in review?
Oh, boy, it was a very good year, and what really happened was we can have successes in all of our departments. We have 7 elected officials and 11 departments totally. What's great for the public is that a new format came out with our year in review report, and we can give an applause to Kate McGuire for doing such an awesome job. Kate's in the studio with us this morning. Big highlight is we have a state-of-the-art 911 dispatch center, and that facility is amazing. If people want to take a tour of it, you can try and set it up. It's secured. You can't just go to the door and knock. But we have some dedicated people out there. And I enjoy going out there once a month just to let them know what a great job they're doing.
I guess the DMV had a busy year.
Unbelievably busy year. 845,000 transactions. And I checked, and the comma is right there, 845,000, just shy of a million. So we made a good move by moving them out to Franklin because there was just so much congestion on the Benjamin facility, and things are working very good out there. Another thing is our FACES. That's our Hope Victim Center. You know, victim restitution is very big, but we also need to have hands-on assistance for some of these victims, a place to stay, and counseling. We have access to nurses and professional counselors that help out in that facility. And then there's the – go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I don't think most people would realize how many people take advantage of that service.
Oh, no, they don't. Last year, we had over 800 adults come through, and that also included over 1,100 children. Children are impacted by broken homes and by parts of violence, too.
Western Idaho Fair, you have here a figure in food consumed during 10 days.
Yeah, that number is something else. I mean,
$1.8 million.
Wow. I bet Chandler's would like to get in on that revenue or some of the other restaurants. But we are blessed with an outstanding fair director. That's Bob Batista. And I enjoy giving credit to the wonderful people we have underneath us, and Bob is just another one of those people. He's got an attitude for being a fair manager. He loves fairs. He's very aggressive in marketing and reaching out, and the food services out there, plus the vendors that we brought in, made for an outstanding fair season. Appetite-wise,
let's talk about the fact that the Ada County Sheriff. That they now have their own Air Force, correct?
Yes, they do. Not F-14s or F-18s, but unmanned aircraft or drones. I mm-hmm. like the drone word, a one word that's easy. But it's going to be very helpful to solving crimes, to getting at a crime scene and getting that close overhead look to see if something is missed and to scope out the area. We also have drones in our IT department, and we've used them heavily during the flood season, and most recently we went out to the Greenbelt repair out by the Shakespeare Center going out to Diversion Dam. So drones are an essential tool that open a lot of avenues for our county.
Western Idaho Fair has a couple of scholarships they give out annually to 4-H and FFA members.
Yes, that's another program that Bob Batista has brought forward and been very successful at. Each year we give out 2 $1,000 scholarships, and prior winners of the scholarships can submit a new application. And I believe last year we added 6, 7, or 8 $1,000 scholarships to either the second, third, or fourth year for these students. They must be 4-H or FFA members and participate in Western Idaho Fair programs. But the feedback that we've got from families and kids that have gotten these scholarships, has just been terrific. They're really grateful for our fair helping them out in their education.
The second annual Treasure Valley Survey from the Boise State School of Public Service was presented to Ada County employees last month. And that has to do a lot with growth. What did people think?
Well, that was the thing that Boise State highlighted the most. The question was, is if residents thought that the Treasure Valley was growing too fast. And the number a year ago was 45%. This past season, it was 55%. And with the other numbers of 15% undivided and 30% saying growth is okay, we are now faced with a 2-to-1 margin of growth is too fast versus those who think growth is okay.
Yeah, and based on people who send us instant messages, it's higher than that.
I'm not surprised. I saw it during our during my campaign. That was the number one issue. Growth is too fast. Thank you both very much, gentlemen.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Commissioner Visser.
Always good to see you.
Thank you, Paul.
926.
Thank you, Chris.
So,
remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time 936 on the KBOI live line. We have Congressman Raul Labrador. Congressman, good morning.
Good morning. Is this the...
No, I'm sorry. Got the wrong guy? Hang on just a sec. Congressman Labrador, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Now that I got you on the phone, I'm really good. A lot of changes in the White House over the last, well, over the last several months. How do you view these changes? Good thing, bad thing? Are they getting something done?
You know, most of them have been good changes. A couple of them have not been great just because they're leaving for not great reasons. But the Rex Tillerson change, for example, I think it's a good thing. I think he's going from somebody that he didn't have as close a relationship with as he now has with Pompeo. You know, Pompeo mm-hmm. and I are friends. We've known each other. He and I started serving together in 2010. He's a very smart guy. He was top of his class at West Point. He's a very intelligent man, and the most important thing is that he has good rapport with the President of the United States. The President of the United States met with him almost daily as the CIA director, and I think has a lot of confidence in him and the work that he's doing. So I think going forward, this is a good thing for the United States and for diplomatic relationships.
Congressman, do you know much about the new CIA director, I guess?
I do not. I don't know much about her. I mean, I know what I have read about her.
Yeah.
But I don't know her personally. There's some issues out there and about enhanced interrogation and other things that are obviously going to be explored during the hearings. But I think she's also a good choice. She's the first female CIA director. She's has a lot of experience and a lot of trust in the CIA community, and I think I can't agree with everybody on everything. You know, even my good friend Mike Pompeo, I don't agree with him on every foreign policy mm-hmm. decision that he will make. But these are good people that are trying to serve their country well, and I'm excited, especially for Mike. I think he's a terrific person, and I think he'll serve our country well.
President is looking over several wall prototypes as options down on the southern border. What do you think of this?
I think it's great. I think, you know, the Homeland Security Director, Secretary, has told us that we need to spend about $25 billion to enhance our border security, to complete the wall, to do all the things that are necessary in our northern border, our southern border, our entry-exit visa programs, all those different things that need to be done to secure our borders. And he's looking at different prototypes. This is where I think the president shines, where he will look for the most cost-effective and the best alternative to do things that that we need to do to enhance our security. So I think that's a good thing. And I think it's great that he's traveling to San Diego and other places to see what's really happening on the border and what we need to do to protect our nation.
Congressman, as usual, every 2 years, all House seats are up for vote. This November, it'll happen. And you went through four of these. Traditionally,
yes.
as you well know from 2010, the first House election after a presidential election usually isn't terribly favorable for the president's party. What do you foresee for the Congress in 2019, the makeup of Congress, and what would it mean for the Freedom Coalition?
So I think, number one, that we're going to keep the House. I know a lot of Republicans are fretting right now, and they think that they're going to lose the House. I think we're going to keep the House. I think we're going to have a lot fewer seats than we currently have. But I think the way the candidates, the sitting members of Congress, I mean, think about the people who have lost. They're not necessarily the greatest candidates ever. Like Rick Saccone is a really nice man. But he underperformed, and it was underwhelming in his performance in his campaign. We've had six different special elections over the last year and a half, and the Republican in the House, and the Republicans have won five out of those six elections. What's funny, the media didn't say that those five victories meant that the Republicans were going to win in November, right? But when a Republican loses, then they say that it portends that we're going to do poorly in the general election. I don't think it means anything. It just speaks specifically about that particular candidate and that particular race. And remember that Pennsylvania is not even over yet. The vote counting hasn't ended. It's a 700-point margin right now, and that margin could be lost in the count. So we'll see what happens. But I do think Republicans need to be concerned that some of these districts that were won overwhelmingly by Trump are actually narrow victories right now or a potential loss. So we can't take anything for granted. We have to work really hard, and we have to do something. And I think this is what Republicans forget in Washington sometimes, is that we have to have a good positive agenda. Just passing the tax bill is not enough. We need to have more victories than just passing the tax bill. We need to do my bill on immigration. You know, I have a great bill with Chairman Goodlatte and others that enforces the immigration laws. It secures the border, does interior security. It protects the DACA population. There's a lot of other bills out here that we should be doing and working towards and getting passed in the House so we can show the American people what our agenda is going to be for the next 2 years. And I think right now the Republican Party does need to get its act together and show that we can do more than just pass a tax bill.
When the president fired Rex Tillerson, he found out about it on Twitter. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that's an interesting narrative because the president, there's been discussion about Rex Tillerson leaving for a long time. You know, for over 2 months, they've been talking about it. And I believe the president and Rex Tillerson have been talking about their issues for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I'm not exactly sure that he just found out about it on Twitter. I mean, it seems like, I mean, if you think about it, the media has been saying now for at least 2 or 3 months that Rex Tillerson was on his way out. So this could not have come as a shock to Rex Tillerson.
There was a nationwide high school walkout yesterday, and it had to do with guns. Now, I don't think the Second Amendment is in any danger, but are there going to be, as far as you know, or would you predict that there will be some changes nationwide when it comes to what's available?
I don't think so. What's going to change is the discussion is shifting now to whether we should have more armed personnel at schools, and I think that's really important. The state of Idaho and other states, we need to look at our laws and make sure that we protect these kids. But changing the Second Amendment is not going to prevent any crazy person from attacking somebody else. In fact, if you look at what happened in Florida, it's pretty clear. The law could have stopped that young man from getting that gun. The law could have stopped him from the attack. And it was law enforcement that failed at their job. There was a hearing actually yesterday where the FBI had to admit all of their failures in Florida. So you know, it always infuriates me when law enforcement and the law fails to, you know, and government fails to do what they're supposed to do, and then we think that the answer is actually to change laws and to take people's rights away from them. Don't take the rights away from law-abiding citizens. Let's make sure that we enforce the laws that are currently in the books. And if we would have enforced the laws that are currently in the books, that young man would have never had access to those guns and would not have been able to end the lives of those students. So let's make sure that we do our job as government, and let's stop trying to take people's rights away from them.
Congressman, thanks for taking time to talk with us this morning.
Hey, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
All right, thank you.
It's 9:45. More of Idaho Talks Live coming up.
You're listening to Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
9:50, Paul, Jay, and Chris on a Thursday.
Got some instant messages, and we've had a lot of guests this morning. Between 8:30 and 9, we had Republicans from the legislature, and then 9 to 9:30, we had Ada County Commissioner Rick Visser, and of course, we just had Congressman Raul Labrador, so we haven't had time to take calls yet, but I got some instant messages that were written during that time. David Boise says, what are these people doing spending $500 million in a year? It's time to plug the hole and stop spending so much. Why can't we be in the bottom percentage but still have some money in our pockets? Money obviously is not the problem solver. Why can't the people in charge of education figure that out? And I believe he was talking about the state at that time. Jeremy Amar Singh says, good morning. While I can appreciate the passion of the protesters, meaning yesterday, I feel it's maybe a knee-jerk reaction. I get some kids might be really scared over the issue, but some are just going with the flow. Where I went to school, you could be beaten or possibly killed for wearing the wrong colors. That was a daily threat. So to the kids, remember your newly found morals and stop texting and driving. Or do you want the age of driving to go up? Or maybe a group of people will want to take your car because it could kill someone. One more thing. I heard Oprah and Clooney are funding a lot of these marches. I'm just sure they have bodyguards. What do they carry? Slingshots? Some interesting points there.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Boise says, whatever happened to not having a child until you can afford one? If you can't pay for childcare, maybe it's time to choose a different career path.
Has that ever been a prerequisite to having kids?
No.
People have always had kids they couldn't afford.
As far as I know, there's only
human nature.
There's only one prerequisite to having kids.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, that is unfortunately absolutely true.
Yeah. Dave goes on. He says, I wish you would have read my message from yesterday. Well, we ran out of time yesterday. We had a lot of callers. I wish you would have read my message from yesterday about the kids being misinformed and bad parenting. It should share some of the blame for today's gun violence, along with gun education, which used to be taught by the parents. And,
yeah. I guess my dad taught me how to shoot. Is that his point?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Well, and, you know, also...
And the Boy Scouts.
Also, better parenting is never a bad thing, no matter what you're talking about.
Absolutely not.
And Gary from Emmett said, there was a student walkout across the country yesterday. I see the whole movement right now is either a cover-up for Sheriff Israel and the FBI and the no-arrest policy of the school district on purpose or not. Focus has been taken off the terrible mishandling of a situation that could have been entirely avoided and saved 17 lives, plus that of the shooter. Deliberately or not, the focus on student calls for unconstitutional gun controls are taking the attention away from the malfeasance committed by various levels of government. Overlooking these circumstances ensures no solution will be implemented in an expedited manner. After 9/11, serious scrutiny was given to agencies responsible for the failures that allowed it to happen. The same level of investigation should happen after Parkland. Maybe adjustments like the TSA might be instituted. Things like the TSA are expensive, and progressive liberals prefer to spend money on other things rather than police in all schools and hardening campuses. bills that fund those kinds of things will not pass without pressure from people who are having their attention distracted by student marches and politicians decrying the NRA.
Isn't it funny, for 8 years when Clinton was president, he's going to take your guns. For 8 years when Obama was president, he's going to take your guns. And now there's actually some movement towards some controls on guns being done by a Republican president.
Well, chances are, they won't get very far.
Well, but still.
Simply because most of the time they don't.
I find that ironic. 9:55. We'll see you tomorrow.